And the opinions on Gaza Corner are my opinions and don't necessarily reflect those of a KALW, a public media. But they give me complete editorial control. There's no censorship, and there are very few places where there is no censorship. I can tell you there's censorship at the New York Times. There's, I think, self-censorship at NPR. Obviously, KPFA does not. Flat, they've got wonderful programs. The Electronic Intifada podcast and Voices of the Middle East and Flashpoints. And KLW does, I think, a good job to offset the deficient reporting on Palestine that NPR. I've documented it many, many, many times how misleading and misinformed NPR is often. And I'll give a quick example in a moment. And the New York Times and the Daily, which we air when it covers Palestine, I find myself wanting to correct things. And that's why it's really important to be able to have a program like this. Now, I'll be the first to admit, it doesn't really make sense in the middle of a music program to talk a half hour about what's happening in the Middle East. And I hope that with listener advocacy and my own, that at some point Gaza Corner can stand on its own and relocate, be spun off from Tangents and live its own slot on the schedule with its own roots in the airwaves in more of a primetime location. With your help, that can happen. What I woke up to this morning was the first story. I think it was 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was the first story from Weekend Edition Saturday. The link is at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. You'll see it. It says, Biden has introduced a plan to end the Israel-Gaza war. Either side has yet to agree. Biden has introduced a plan to end the Israel-Gaza war. That's the headline. Either side has yet to agree. So this is Scott Simon in a very brief comment, but I think it's telling.
President Biden unveiled an Israeli plan yesterday to end the war in Gaza. He endorsed the proposal and said it would lead to the release of all hostages and an enduring ceasefire. Hamas has not yet agreed to the plan.
Okay. You notice Hamas has not yet agreed to the plan, as if every single ceasefire proposal or hostage deal, it's always on Hamas. Now, what Scott doesn't mention at any point in this segment, or the other correspondent, let me just get her name, Asma Khalid. Okay, so in early May, we were hearing all kinds of things out of Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State. Hamas will not agree to a deal. It's Hamas's fault. Hamas, 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 Hamas. And then Hamas agrees to the deal that was put together between Egypt and Qatar. Supposedly Israel was on board. And hallelujah, Hamas said yes. And then Israel said no. And we didn't hear a word out of Antony Blinken. Every single time they've been close to a deal, Netanyahu has nixed it. And in this case, Hamas welcomed the proposal. They need to go through it and decide whether they want to accept it. But Netanyahu has already nixed it. At the time that Hamas accepted the hostage deal and the ceasefire proposal back in early May, A U.S. official told Reuters, quote, Netanyahu and the war cabinet have not appeared to approach the latest phase of negotiations with Hamas in good faith. That's quote, unquote. And now with the latest offer, Netanyahu has said what he always says, and that is, we will fight until total victory, until Hamas is no longer capable of an October 7th attack. Meanwhile, Biden said, while announcing this latest offer,
at this point, Hamas no longer is capable of carrying out another October 7th.
Which is contrary to what Netanyahu is saying. Gidon Levy, the Israeli columnist for Haaretz, he wrote a piece tomorrow, which is actually today in Israel, June 2nd. The headline, Biden wants peace, but Israel wants war. He concludes his column by saying, even Hamas at this point wants peace more than Israel does. So the mainstream media, and NPR in particular, keeps blaming Hamas for these breakdowns in negotiations. And the real culprit is Netanyahu, who realizes that as long as the war continues, he's not likely to be removed from power. Because once he's removed from power, he's facing corruption charges and could end up in jail inside Israel. Or if he travels outside Israel, he also has arrest warrants from the International Criminal Court. I want to read a few emails from Tangents listeners, recent ones. One's from a David Anderson. He was taken by an article by Chaim Levinson in Haaretz, which is one of the more liberal newspapers, or maybe the most liberal newspaper in Israel. In general, I mean, they also have people that are more on the right wing, but some of the articles, like from Amira Haas and Gidon Levy, are far more open-minded to the Palestinian plight. He says, everything you need to know about the internal state of Israel at the moment is in this op-ed by Chaim Levinson. What is disconcerting, actually chilling, is that it reflects the corruption and divisiveness in our own country personified by Trump and his MAGA minions. The title of the piece from Chaim Levinson is, this is the greatest threat facing Israel. It's not Hamas. And then subtitled, That Threat Comes From Within Us. I wrote back to David. I said, thanks for bringing Levinson's piece to my attention. I have access to the full article in Haaretz. I subscribe. There are many similarities between Trump and Netanyahu, and both the United States and Israel have conceivable threats of civil war from within. What I found disturbing about the opinion piece was the fact that the word Palestinian, nor even the word racist, do not appear anywhere. Netanyahu is everything that Levinson describes him as, but above all, he is the architect of a genocide. That omission points to the dehumanization of Palestinians in Israeli society. Israel's democracy for Jews may improve if Netanyahu departs, but it will remain beyond hell for Palestinians, regardless of Israel's leader for the foreseeable future. That's what I wrote back to David. Doug Font wrote a very quick email. This was just the other day. I just stumbled across this, meaning Tangents, first-time listener, I assume. I love it so far, and he's talking about Gaza Corner. And then from Elizabeth Forster, hey, Dory, I am usually working during Tangents in every waking hour, but every once in a while I am driving home and catch some of the show, like I did when I heard a Stephanie Baroni song. Caught Gaza Corner tonight and the two great songs that preceded it. Thanks for the history lesson. I gave a history lesson, if you will, that I think clarified to a large extent the roots of the conflict between Israel and Palestine and why, in my view, it's really not complicated. And I talked about the Nakba and what led to it, which is the catastrophe of 1947 through 49. It's an ongoing Nakba, continuing now. She goes on to say, if a non-Jew questions the Israeli Netanyahu agenda, it seems he or she risks being judged as anti-Semitic. I am both born in and American raised in San Francisco and am ashamed of the roles played by both countries in this conflict. Thank you for ending with an excellent quote and suggestion for a possible pathway to healing, Elizabeth Forster. I mentioned to her, as a Jew, maybe people don't call me anti-Semitic, but certainly self-hating Jew is a common refrain from people who don't agree. Barbara and Barry Deutsch, who contributed tonight, and a wonderful words from them, and this is from Barbara. She says, thanks so much for all you are continuing to do for those who need is so great, who include us, who need to know the truth of what is being done in our names with our collective resources. And this from Annette Bistrup, longtime friend in Tangents, used to work at KLW and is very engaged with the station. She says, what a presentation you made. I feel like I could hear your pain and sadness, and you're being moved by what you were reporting. It's also atrocious. I had a thought, interested in your take on it. Do you think it's possible that Israel Netanyahu has taken the current severe action out of proportion with Hamas in order to destabilize Biden's stature re-election campaign, in that there's some implicit or even explicit quid pro quo with the Trump faction? At this point, I certainly wouldn't put it beyond anyone. And I think these dark powers working behind the scenes of things, they'd have it in them to exert that kind of influence. And at this point, I don't think they'd have any compunctions about doing it. Anyway, deep respect to you for putting these segments together and for how you present them on air. My response, I say, in fact, Hamas has been able to relocate to central Gaza, where Israel had already declared victory, and now Israel is carpet bombing this already destroyed area again. Netanyahu's primary reason for the genocidal war is to stay in office and not face serious corruption charges. His ultra-racist extremist partners, Itamar Ben-Gavir and Bezalel Smotrich, have made it clear they will leave Netanyahu's coalition and force him from power if he puts his foot off the genocidal gas pedal. They want to depopulate all of Gaza and have settlers move in. Yes, Netanyahu would love to last past the November election and see a Trump victory. And this from Tim Isom. Dory, I have to say I'm proud to tell you my son Graham was one of the negotiators for the Gaza Solidarity encampment at Evergreen College, and they got the school to go along. No riot police, no expulsions. I'm sure you know, but I was unaware, that Rachel Corrie went to Evergreen. Rachel Corrie was killed by an Israeli bulldozer as she stood in front of a Palestinian home that was about to be demolished due to the collective punishment that Israel routinely engages in. So he says, I'm sure you know, but I was unaware that Rachel Corrie went to Evergreen, so maybe they are a little more aware of the horrors that the Israeli IDF is capable of. Still a significant example of how other universities might work with students to support their rejection of the genocide.